Hello. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of January 2016. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Judith Steventon-Baker and Valerie Lilly. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Norma York.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are That Was Some Party, post-Christmas in Winchester, Viability of Eco Plan Uncertain, and £8 million boost for Hub. So we'll find out what exactly those are with Maria, please, for the first one.
That was some party, post-Christmas in Winchester. Most of us like a drink over the Christmas period, but the Tesco bottle bank in Winnall has felt the full brunt of the morning after. Last emptied on New Year's Eve, the area was overflowing on Tuesday with more than 1,000 bottles. People took to social media to vent their concern. One man, Jim Mitchell of Milland Road, Highcliffe, said, "I think the whole of Winchester just got boozed up and had a good time. It just looks awful and it will only get worse." A Tesco spokesperson said, "All the bottles were collected today, Tuesday, and we're looking at increasing the number of collections for future bank holidays." The dumped bottles sparked concern by alcohol awareness groups. Jackie Ballard, chief executive of Alcohol Concern, said, "Dry January is an incredible opportunity to give the body a break, reassess our relationship with alcohol and gain some great health benefits such as lower blood sugar, lower blood pressure, improved sleep and losing weight." And there's a very colourful picture with this article of a sea of bottles.
Viability of eco plan uncertain. Uncertainty surrounds the future of a green scheme which could reduce Winchester's carbon footprint and save energy. The Winchester District in Energy Scheme would see some of the city's major buildings linked by underground pipes. However, a feasibility report revealed it carries significant risk and its future is unclear. The £9.3 million project by Hampshire County Council originally aimed to connect the prison, hospital, university and county council headquarters, although the Ministry of Justice pulled Winchester Prison out over uncertainty for the future of the site. The scheme was proposed in 2013 and involved pumping hot water through a network of pipes. Instead of individual boilers, there would be one central combined heat and power plant, and county chiefs say benefits to include cutting carbon emissions by 30% and cheaper energy. The study, which costs £144,000, with funding secured from the Heat Networks Delivery Unit, revealed success relies on long-term heat and power purchases being agreed with the university and the hospital. It also said the scheme would likely need grant funding. However, due to cuts, there is no government funding available. The project would also need to gain planning permission for an energy centre sited at the university. The study also noted uncertainty surrounding the long-term future of public sector sites, including the prison and the hospital. The Buildings, Land and Procurement Panel of Hampshire County Council discussed the feasibility study and agreed further work is needed on heating demands. Councillor Mel Kendall, chairman of the Buildings, Land and Procurement Panel of the County Council, said, "We welcome the visibility of setting up a district energy scheme in Winchester, which includes options to connect the University of Winchester buildings, the RHCH and the County HQ buildings, with the aim of developing a scheme to improve energy security and energy costs. However, any scheme would need a critical number of partners to satisfy the future heat demand to offset the risk of setting it up. At the moment, there is a degree of uncertainty about the long-term plans for the public sector estate in Winchester. Winchester Action on Climate Change chairman Dr. Tony Stoller said, "The meeting was encouraging. I think everybody on the panel says it's a really good scheme. The only problem is that in order to be sure that it stacks up financially, we need to know for sure that the buildings will want to use the heat. I came back from the meeting feeling encouraged by the cross-party support for the scheme. It's too good an opportunity to miss," said Dr. Stoller.
6 million boost for Hub. Plans for the new sports centre moved a step closer after Winchester University pledged to pump in £6 million. Winchester City Council and the university have confirmed a partnership to explore options for a new sports and leisure hub next to the sports stadium at Bar End. A memorandum of understanding has been signed for both to work together on the project. The university has, in principle, committed £6 million towards the centre, which would cost around £25 million. The authorities are gathering your opinions of the students, residents and businesses before they present a preferred site model to the council's cabinet and university board in March. The news was greeted warmly by sports campaigners. Chief Executive of the Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, Emma Back, said, "It is far and away the best location. It has been a long, hard road to get to this stage, but hopefully it will be an easier walk from here on out." The really exciting thing is that where it goes from now and to think what we have done in the past has hopefully made a real impact. We started pushing for the site 4 to 5 years ago as Winchester Fit for the future because we wanted a sustainable legacy for London 2012. We rebranded in 2014 as SALT to take the organisation forward. SALT has revealed its own Bar End proposals in 2013 and has been pushing for the site ever since. However, criticism has been voiced of the site as too far from the city centre and encouraging use of cars. If the centre at Bar End is built, it is hoped it would meet the district's needs for the next 30 years, while the previously suggested £4 to 6 million revamp of the ageing River Park Leisure Centre could only extend its life by a decade. Nothing has yet been announced on what could replace the current centre in Hyde. Professor Joy Carter, University Vice-Chancellor, said, "This is an incredibly exciting opportunity for us to work together to shape sports and leisure participation in Winchester. The University of Winchester takes very seriously its role as a major contributor to the economic and cultural life of the city. So it is fitting that we are partnering with the City Council on this significant project for the health and well-being of the community and the future prosperity of the city." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, council leader, said, "I am delighted that the University of Winchester has chosen to join the council and other partners in working towards providing the improved leisure facilities in Winchester wants and needs. There is still a way to go forward before we have an agreed project and the prize of a new leisure centre. This development marks an important step on the road."
Here are the death notices. Barnett, David George Barnett, aged 71. Basquell, John Alfred Basquell, at home, aged 85. Cole, Jane Lindsay Cole, suddenly at home in Northampton. Cesar, Katie Cesar. Cumeen, Eileen Margaret Cumeen, aged 84. Hunt, Wendy Jane Hunt, aged 56, after a courageous battle against ovarian cancer. Richardson, Mary Molly Richardson, at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 92. Saxton, Patricia Saxton, at Romsey Hospital, aged 87. And White, James White, peacefully, aged 92. Christian comment is read by Norma, please.
Defriended for being a Christian? Recently, I was defriended on Facebook by someone I had known since my teens. In fact, this was no ordinary friend. We had served in the same regiment of the army, in the same company, the same section, even in Northern Ireland. I cannot pretend it did not hurt. It followed a short intellectual tussle about philosophical and theological differences. The differences proved unresolvable. Essentially, I was defriended because I am a Christian and hold a theistic understanding of the world and my existence in it, and he doesn't. In fact, he holds that Christian doctrine and those of the Abrahamic tradition threaten world security. Yes, world security. Meaning essentially that all religions to him are culpable mind viruses designed to control and fracture society, and not to mend them. I soon grew weary of the argument, but we could not even manage to agree to disagree. His attitude was that any resistance to abandonment of faith meant simply that I was parochial, even medieval. Religion, and in particular Christianity, are, for my friend, at the centre of all the world's troubles. Not arms dealers, political corruption, human greed, poverty, illegal war, or foreign policy designed to obtain resources and undeserved advantage, and at least of all, never ever blame capitalism. No, never. It is not a sign of the times that you can be defriended for being Christian. I spent many hours thinking about what all this meant. I asked myself and God why anyone would be hostile towards Christianity, towards Jesus. Had my friend really never heard of the peace of loving gospel of Jesus? Why didn't I have the answer? Luckily, there are many clever and more robust and dedicated Christians than I, in holy orders and not, and although I may have felt a little battered and bruised by the whole experience, I predominantly felt a sadness that my friend didn't share the vibrancy of my faith. I prayed for him as I wondered what could have made him so totalitarian about something so beautiful. Albert Camus, the French existentialist, wrote, "Without a master, the weight of days is dreadful." He points to the unavoidable conclusion that without God, not the other way round, freedom and responsibility is too heavy a kind of burden for humankind. Christianity is liberating and invigorating, not oppressive or devaluing. The Christian message is one of love. It is not about, it's about value, potential. It's about God wanting only the very best for all his creation. It is only the human heart that resists these things. This whole event probably bothered more than it should. I suspect I am guilty of pride and self-reliance, and I know that I must guard against it and move on, get on with the proper business of proclaiming the life-giving, soul-saving gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. Love my neighbour, love Jesus, love God, harmony and salvation, love complete. That was by the Reverend Graham Bokett.
And now we come to letters, please. So if we could have the first letter from you, Maria.
And this first letter is by Elizabeth Proudman and is titled Great Designers. Sir, readers may be interested to know that Allies and Morrison, the architects of the Silver Hill scheme, have been shortlisted as architects for the restoration of the Houses of Parliament. Many people are unaware of their international renown. They were master planners for the Olympic Park. They designed the Sam Wanamaker Theatre at Shakespeare's Globe. They renovated the Royal Festival Hall and the Greenwich Observatory. They're responsible for a number of Cambridge college buildings, art centres, etc., and many buildings overseas. A particular good example of their work is the British Embassy in Dublin. They have worked for 12 years with the planners in Winchester, consulting local groups and holding public exhibitions in an effort to satisfy as many of the disparate opinions in the city as possible. It will be a pity if we let the opportunity slip away to have buildings in Winchester designed by such a distinguished practice. Elizabeth Proudman, St John Street, Winchester.
Saga continues. Sir, another year starts, the Silver Hill saga rolls on, and the area becomes even more run down. Over the years, I've tried to follow the various twists and turns, as well as attending public meetings. However, like I suspect most residents, I'm thoroughly confused where we are now. Residents are entitled to a clear, unambiguous statement from the City Council. We shouldn't have to rely upon Councillor Gottlieb for this information. Early last year, the Council issued a press release regarding the appointment of an independent review to establish the facts and to learn lessons from this sorry matter. It stated that the reviewers aimed to present their report before the summer recess last year. But why the delay? Both main political groups have been in control of the council while the Silver Hill development was being planned. Could it be that no party wants the report published before the May elections? And that's from Andrew Beadle, Miles Down Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Anniversary year. Sir, January sees the 40th anniversary of the founding of the Winchester Gay Group. Like its companion in Southampton, the group disappeared several years ago, largely absorbed into the commercial gay scene of backstreet bars. Also, arguably, such groups have long since served their purpose as British society has moved on. Our first few meetings were held at the Winchester Quaker Meeting House and were paid for by the late Bill Alchin, a Winchester friend. At their peak, the two groups had enjoyed around 100 members. There also existed befriending services and telephone links. Years earlier in Hampshire, youth who had committed suicide was later found to have been struggling with his homosexuality. This tragedy had in turn led to the publication in 1962 of the booklet Towards a Quaker View of Sex, a contributor to which had been Dr. Lottie Rosenberg, also a Winchester friend. Indeed, the Quakers seem to have been the first Christian group to openly accept gay people. Nowadays, many other churches emphasise their inclusiveness, although to varying degrees and with occasional lapses. Plus, those great gay groups are now simply a part of Hampshire history. However, I should like to hear from anyone who remembers them or is interested in resurrecting them. My email is lowercase anthonyporter7846@hotmail.com. I'll repeat that. anthonyporter7846@hotmail.com. And that, as I said, was from Anthony Porter of 159 Ashmore Road, London, W93AD.
Rhodes can't cope. Sir, the two letters with opposing views on the parking issue on December the 24th were entirely predictable. The whole problem having been caused by the government diktat to build 4,000 houses in the city. There was, of course, no way our roads were ever going to cope with the increased traffic or that there would be enough parking. The parking situation will be further exacerbated by the forthcoming closure of the Chesil Street surface car park, the likelihood of building on the Cattle Market car park, and, when the St Clemens surgery moves, the loss of parking in the Upper Brook Street car park. Meanwhile, landowners will be eyeing up the possibility of selling land to developers waiting in the wings. And I would like to think the City Council would be firm in a resolve never to allow the building of a single house in excess of the 4,000 already allocated. Rosemary Halliwell, St James Villas, Winchester.
And we have one here from Rupert Marks, Park and Ride Use. In response to Andy Smith's letter in the Chronicle of December 24th regarding people not being able to use the park and ride service within the city, I'm happy to inform him you can, and indeed lots of people do, including me, hopping on at any stop between the end car parks. I often go from Chesil Car Park to the hospital and a number 5 to Battery Hill Corner. After 8 p.m, the park and ride stops at all the other stops as well, so I've been from the hospital to Battery Hill Corner on park and ride for the same price as a number 6. I must also congratulate Phil Gagg on his wonderful letter of December 24th regarding park and rides, and also offer concern that Winchester City Council are considering increasing the number of parking spaces after 20 years of reducing them. The City Council has been at the forefront of cutting carbon emissions and hope they will carry on the good work and keep the parking places down. As Mr. Gagg pointed out, reduced parking spaces has encouraged park and ride use, and reducing car parking has cut carbon emissions to the city. And for the good of the planet, they need to continue doing so. And that's from Rupert Marks of Nightingale Close, Winchester.
Christmas market. Sir, the Christmas market has been a disaster for local traders and locals alike, chronicled December the 31st. Whilst we realise that the cathedral must make some money, it should not be at the expense of traders that are here all the time. Most of them pay a high rent for the street location. They are the life and soul of the city, not some fly-by-night Christmas market selling goods from B&Q sheds. Yet again, the response we get from the current dean, the very Reverend James Atwell, is silence. This is the same dean that refused to close the ice rink for the last dean's funeral 2 years ago. An ice rink that won't give refunds when the conditions are dangerous. A Christmas market that can't give refunds because it's gone. Thank you for the spirit of Christmas, Winchester Cathedral. That was from A.J. Nichols of Paintersfield, St. Cross.
Agents of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Sir, while the Hampshire Chronicle plays an invaluable role in reporting planning proposals you have together with the esteemed City of Winchester Trust, become unwitting agents of a process known as the self-fulfilling prophecy. This is illustrated by your report on December the 24th under the heading Design Approved, that the proposed design of a new art complex at Peter Simmons College has received the backing of local heritage campaigners if changes are made. Although the Trust reflects the feeling of local residents that it was unfortunate that the building was not part of the rest of the campus, the changes it suggested were to do with choice of material rather than choice of location, which remains unfortunate to say the least. The implication that where this building would sit is a fait accompli helps to fulfil Peter Simmons' development prophecy. John Huggett, Brassy Road, Winchester.
Clean cathedral, says Elizabeth Crawley. Sir, it's such a joy and relief to see the west end of the cathedral and the war memorial clean, dignified and uncluttered once again. Many local residents, not to mention the cathedral congregation and community, have been distressed to find tentacles of the Christmas market reaching out once again to desecrate this beautiful space. Whatever must be the thousands of December and Christmas visitors to this fine historic city, think of our basic human values. Let us hope there'll now be a rethink. And that's from Elizabeth Crawley, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
News on tax bill. Sir, any news from the Inland Revenue as to how the Ginger 2 Cafe was allowed to rake up and a tax bill of more than £550,000 December the 17th? No doubt the Inland Revenue will hide behind confidentiality at the end of the day. Whose money are we talking about? And that's from A.E. Emptage, Romsey Road, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Emailing news@HampshireChronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now, from the files, we have the historical news. And Maria's going to start with 200 years ago.
200 years ago, January the 8th, 1816, there are two items. And the first one is titled Baker's Find. Last week, several bakers in the Hundred of Hatfield and County of Essex appeared before the Reverend Charles Dalton, clerk at Keldon, to summonses on information for selling bread short of weight and using strong, deleterious ingredients such as alum, pearl ash, and sal ammoniac, etc., when they were each convicted in severe penalties and costs. The whole penalty was ordered to be given to the informers who were the cause of bringing the offending parties to justice, and the bread was given to the poor. Military cuts. The reduction of the Royal Marine Corps to the peace establishment took place last week. This force in the war was composed of 35,000 men. Now it will not exceed 6,500 men. There are to be 80 companies of 72 men in each at the four divisions, with one captain, two first lieutenants, and one second lieutenant to each company. The staff to remain the same as it is at present at all the divisions, except the second commandments. The reduction took place on Monday.
And now, at 100 years ago, on January the 8th, 1916, mail ship sunk. The Peninsula and Oriental steamship Persia, which left London on December the 18th, has been torpedoed and sunk by a submarine in the eastern Mediterranean. Of a total of 501 souls on board, only 166 are known to have been saved. There was little cargo on board and no more war material. The Persia carried an exceptionally large mail. 11,000 bags were landed at Malta. The exact number for Egypt and India is not known, but it is thought that between 20,000 and 30,000 bags have been lost. The saved include 99 passengers, of whom 17 are women and 2 are children. And secondly, put that light out. Winchester City Council, new lighting order. With regard to lights belonging to private individuals, there were to be no external lights on buildings, whether in the nature of houses of amusement or business establishments, or any buildings belonging to private individuals. With regard to public lighting, there would be a diminution in the lighting, and that would resolve itself not only in the putting out of certain number of lamps, but also partially obscuring those which remain. In hotels, flats, dwelling houses and premises of all descriptions, lights inside must be so shaded and or reduced that no more than a dull, subdued light is visible from any direction outside.
50 years ago, January the 7th, 1966. Sewage stench. The stench from St Catherine's Hill sewage farm would be the ultimate answer to Winchester's traffic problem, suggested Councillor E.J. Hibbard at Wednesday's meeting of the City Council. I don't think we shall have a traffic problem if it becomes known that Winchester is a city with a terrible smell, he said. If once it becomes well known that we are going to tolerate this for too long, then people will stop coming to the city. His remarks came after the chairman of the Health Committee reported that the committee had decided it would be unnecessary and uneconomic to join in a proposed scheme for a trunk sewer through the Itchen Valley to the disposal works at Eastleigh. Romsey grows. The preservation of the character of Romsey by eliminating traffic as much as possible from the town centre, diverting A31 motorists on an extended bypass and building a multi-storey car park near the shopping centre, is foreseen in two draft maps published by the Hampshire County Council on Tuesday. The maps also contain proposals, including a grammar school, designed to cope with doubling of Romsey's 8,000 population by 1981. At present, there are 400 cars parked at peak times in the centre of Romsey, and the town centre map caters for a future need of 1,200.
And 25 years ago, January the 6th, 1991, need for housing. Hampshire County Council could help to provide affordable housing if they were to look closer at its land holdings and its policy for disposal of surplus sites. That's the view of East Hampshire District Council's Planning Policy Committee, which has welcomed proposals for a rural development strategy for Hampshire. They believe the County Council itself should be among the agencies that ought to be asked to review their land bank to see if they might make suitable sites for the building of low-cost housing schemes. The committee approved the aims of the strategy, which include safeguarding of the Hampshire countryside. Crop circle mystery. The crop circle creators have a far greater intelligence than man and ensure the markings they leave in fields remain inexplicable. That's the firm belief of a Hampshire man trying to unravel the mystery. The mystery of the flattened corn markings came to a head early last summer when numerous pictograms appeared in various shapes and sizes in fields in Hampshire and Wiltshire. An Aylesford scientist, Mr. Pat Delgado, who has studied them for over 10 years, is still mystified. He said the sustained interest was because no one knew exactly what they were.
Ooh. From that, we go to Chronicle Comment, please, Brian.
Which is much more down to earth. Project saves money as well as the planet. Connecting Winchester's public institutions by a network of underground pipes is not as sinister as it sounds. The Winchester District Energy Scheme would cut carbon emissions by nearly a third at the hospital, university and county council by heating them through a central power plant. But as the £9.3 million project is far from secure, nerves are jangling at the county over whether there is enough demand to make it worthwhile. Such uncertainty comes to the government as the government tries to set the green energy industry on its own feet, pulling subsidies and eroding the competitive advantages which nurtured privately run projects. Campaigners are optimistic, and having cross-party support is warming news. Winchester's economic strength has allowed councils to bear the burden of cuts and creatively adapt some of their additional ambitious proposals. This should be no different. And if council leaders are right to claim the network would significantly cut bills, one hopes there's incentive for the organisations involved beyond their responsibility to the planet. There may be doubt about the long-term future of the hospital or prison, but it will ever be a time when every part of such a complex system falls perfectly into place.
And Maria, can we please go over to first person?
The end of a long love affair. Ending a long-term relationship is always hard. There's never a good time. But it's especially hard at Christmas, when reminders of the past are all around, when family and friends look at you with concerned expressions but can't really share your pain. It's even harder when it's a relationship that has lasted almost as long as you can remember, a relationship that has been at the heart of all your major life events, celebrating the highs and there for you as a source of comfort during the lows. Yes, giving up sugar is one of the hardest things I've done. But when my mother said she worried I was drifting towards type 2 diabetes, when I could see I was morphing into a cross between a well-upholstered sofa and a Shetland pony, and my energy levels had crashed to something just above a piece of roadkill, I finally took action and got some excellent advice on nutrition. Cutting down bread, cheese and pasta was surprisingly easy, also tea and coffee. I never liked Kate Moss's infamous quote, "Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels." This was an irresponsible phrase from the influential Moss, indirectly glamorising anorexia and the pernicious size zero culture of the fashion industry. Nevertheless, I have come up with my own version. No present feels better than being able to zip up your jeans without the help of a metal hook, one industrial winch and four off-duty firemen. Yet even so, my love of sugar remains like poor Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings. I feel the final victory is still not won. It's because sugar is one of the most addictive substances known to humankind, and it lies at the heart of the crisis of obesity and poor health we face today. So strong was its initial appeal in the 18th century that a system of slavery grew up around it to harvest the raw cane. Its import and taxation created such a consumer boom and engorged the coffers of the exchequer that, according to historian Neil Ferguson, the rise of the British Empire has less to do with a Protestant work ethic or national individualism, but more to do with the British sweet tooth. Since the human brain's reward centre is programmed to want to repeat the triggering of happy chemicals, it's not surprising that our culture and food industry has put sugar centre stage ever since. It's not just in cakes, sweets and chocolate. A glass of wine is in essence a glass of sugar, alas. Dubbed the White Death for its effect on the human body, high sugar intake contributes to liver and heart disease, poor skin and cancer. But because sugar offers a temporary high, a distraction or short-term energy boost, we stubbornly crave its short-term fix. This time of year is surely the best moment to outsmart its hold on us. As many weight loss specialists caution, treating it as an addiction can backfire by making you feel defeatist, that the problem is too huge, or that it's not your fault. Yet even small changes in behaviour can make an instant difference, like shopping online for recipe-driven fresh ingredients, so you're less tempted to stray into the naughty aisle. Understanding that a Twix is not going to solve the reasons why you look for a sugar fix in the first place is a big step. The second is having a goal beyond your selfie. Ditch the incentive photo of Rosie Huntington-Whiteley and Jason Statham cavorting on a beach in Thailand you've just stuck on the fridge door. Instead, look for a charity event to take part in with a group, like a sponsored walk for Naomi House or Help the Heroes. Let's do it for people whose health challenges are not self-inflicted, but whose willpower, spirit and positivity should be enough to give us all a natural high.
And now we come to Belgarum. There are three little items for Belgarum. So would you read the first one, please, Brian?
Yes. No 24/7 trade at takeaways. Many tired and emotional partygoers were dismayed on New Year's Eve to learn that Winchester's takeaways had shut for the night. Services which normally deliver into the early hours had been giving their hard-working delivery force a night off, forcing some onto the streets in search of sustenance. Drunk young things who have grown up in a 24-hour culture were shocked to learn that one of the highlights of their year would not end with a full face of pizza or kebab at 3 a.m. It brought echoes of how Winchester used to be, a city where the pubs kicked out early and Sundays were as lively as King Alfred's tomb. The city still has relatively few late-opening shops and bars, partly as a result of opposition by residents, but several pubs parted well into the night last Thursday. The cost-cutter shop at the BP petrol station on Bar End Road comes to the rescue of many as it opens 24/7, 35 days a year.
Trust history recognised. A little piece of Winchester history has not been forgotten amid the cost-cutting. Plaques acknowledging the support of the Beeston Trust for 93 years have been installed in the new police station. The Trust helps to provide recreational amenities to police officers and staff. Since it was founded in 1922 by Letitia Beeston in memory of her husband Frederick. The former parsonage of St John's Church in Water Lane was the site of the first Beeston House, founded for officers obliged to live in lodgings. In 1965, the opening of the station at North Walls included the Beeston Room, which the charity furnished and equipped. Now the new base in the High Street continues that tradition. Chief Inspector Claire Taylor said, "The Beeston Room at North Walls was a highly valued and calm space away from the front line. I am very grateful to Karen Bateman and her team, who have worked hard to bring the Beeston Trust facilities to this refurbished building. It's now accessible to a wider group of officers based in Winchester and Winnall, but also the police staff working here. Since the original trust was formed, the trustees have always included one superintendent, one inspector, one sergeant and one constable." And there's a picture of Peter McManus, who's a trustee, and the chief inspector, Claire Taylor, holding up the plaque.
New festive fixture. Perhaps it is the start of an annual tradition. The Christmas Cafe at the University of Winchester was a success with around 30 people visiting during the morning. They included the homeless and students as well as local people. The cafe opened on Christmas Day as a place where anyone could go for a bit of company on a day when thousands of people are alone. National newspapers reported that across the UK, an estimated 500,000 people, mainly elderly, were alone on December the 25th. Senior staff gave up part of their Christmas Day to ensure that they need not be the case in Winchester. Pictured is Deputy Vice-Chancellor Elizabeth Stewart, number two in the hierarchy, and also serving at the counter was Student Services Manager Susan Henderson. Professor Stewart said, "The university values compassion and views radical hospitality as an important part of what we do. It was a privilege to serve and talk to members of the community, especially on a day which may be difficult or lonely for some." And there's a small picture of these two people mentioned toasting with a cup of coffee.
Now we come to what's on in the next few weeks. On Saturday the 16th of January at St Paul's Church, Winchester, there's a charity concert by Winchester Chamber Orchestra in aid of Solent Mind. They're performing pieces from Fauré, Saint-Saëns and Schumann, and tickets are £8. More information can be found at Winchester Chamber Orchestra, that's all one word, .org.uk. winchesterchamberorchestra.org.uk. Until February the 3rd, you can see the great nave of Winchester Cathedral without chairs, to give you an idea of how the space would have looked in earlier times. Also, on the 26th of January, that's a Tuesday, the cathedral is holding an open evening. From 6:30 to 8:30, there'll be displays, tours and demonstrations, and the building will be partially lit by candles. There'll also be a short concert by the Boy Choristers. Entry is free and all are welcome. And then on Wednesday the 27th of January, there's a Space for Peace concert in the cathedral at 7:30 p.m. Local, national, community and school choirs perform at various parts of the cathedral in a multi-faith vigil for peace. And this event is also free. At the Haymarket Theatre Basingstoke, from January the 27th to the 30th, you can see Secondary Cause of Death, I presume it's a thriller, at 7:30 in the evening and 2 o'clock on the Thursday and Saturday. And the box office number is 01256 844 244. And the same box office number will book you to see the band of Her Majesty's Royal Marines when it comes to the Anvil on Sunday the 31st of January at 3 p.m. So that number is 01256 844 244. And finally, the Winchester City Festival Choir is performing at Thorndon School, Chandler's Ford, on Saturday, the 30th of January, singing Haydn's Nelson Mass and Vivaldi's Gloria, and there are also some orchestral pieces. Tickets are £15, and you can book them by ringing 02380 246555. That's 02380 246555, or you can just come on the door. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 8th of January, at 8:07 a.m. and begins again at 4:17 p.m. On Wednesday the 13th of January, it ends at 8:04 a.m. We've got 3 minutes more of light there, and begins at 4:24 p.m. A little more in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's 01962 870370. And now we continue with further items of general news. Maria, please.
Tributes to town's stalwart after death. Tributes have been paid to a well-known Bishop's Waltham man who died over Christmas. John Watts, a retired engineer, journalist and naval veteran, was an active volunteer for decades and helped found many groups in the town. The 87-year-old of Eastways was raised in Bournemouth and served in the Royal Navy for more than 20 years. Moving to Bishop's Waltham in 1971, after a stint as an engineer for Mullods in Southampton, Mr. Watts soon became a key community figure. He helped found the town's Rotary Club, Residents Association and Citizens Advice Bureau, as well as the Meon Valley Bowling Club and Meon Valley Lions. As Chief Rural Officer of Hampshire Council of Community Service, he helped villages maintain their facilities and low-cost housing. Peter Yeoman of Bishop's Waltham Rotary said, "John worked tirelessly for the club for many years, helping to raise substantial funds over the years, and will be sadly missed. Mr. Watts, a long-time editor of the Parish Magazine, also serving as a parish councillor and reporting on local and county news for the Chronicle's sister paper, The Daily Echo. His long history of volunteering and public service also includes roles at the local care group, luncheon club and brownies. He was also a governor at Swanmore Secondary School, now Swanmore College. In 1991, Mr. Watts left the world of journalism to pursue his lifelong passion for painting, selling chiefly townscapes and home portraits. His standing in the community eventually led him to run for Winchester City Council in 1986 as a candidate for the Liberals and SDP. It was a good turnout for the funeral, said friend John Stream. He was a really nice guy, a very caring man, and very caring for everybody. John Charles Watts died on December the 21st. He leaves behind Valerie Watts, to whom he was married for 48 years, and has 4 children, 3 stepchildren, 10 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren. And there's a portrait, a portrait photograph of John Charles Watts with the article.
Better treatment thanks to a new kit. People with kidney stones and prostate problems could have revolutionised treatment thanks to a hospital's investment. The Nuffield Health Wessex Hospital is now home to a £95,000 laser which is set to transform treatment. The hospital in Chandler's Ford has put thousands of pounds towards the holmium laser to allow surgeons to remove kidney stones without making any incision and dramatically improve recovery times. The holmium laser will mainly be used to treat patients with large or problematic kidney stones. The higher-tech new equipment is also expected to be used for prostate removal, providing a much less invasive way of treating patients and allowing them to recover faster. Mr. Bhaskar Somani, urology consultant at Nuffield Health Wessex Hospital, said, "This new laser will be of huge benefit to our patients in Winchester, Southampton and the New Forest, as the Nuffield is the only private hospital in the area to have this piece of kit. It will allow them to get back on their feet much faster than if they had traditional surgery. The laser will work by using a beam delivered through a superfine laser fibre between 0.27 millimetres and 0.8 millimetres wide, using short, intense pulses of laser power to break the stones down into tiny particles, which are removed or passed naturally. The process, which takes between 20 minutes and an hour, is less invasive than the traditional surgery of finding leaves no scarring." Having performed more than 1,000 such procedures, Mr. Somani added that the new advanced laser may also possibly help to decrease operating time. He said around 80% of our patients return home the same day after kidney stone operations, compared to a national average of around 25%.
The last months for Cheshire car parking. Make the most of it while you can. The City Council is preparing to close the Cheshire Street open-air car park on Monday, February the 8th. It is soon to build 52 extra care homes for older people on the site, with construction starting next month. The project is due to finish in early autumn 2017. The £15 million scheme has been funded by the City and County Councils and Homes and Community Agency and a local bequest. The City Council says extra care is desperately needed in Winchester as the population ages and becomes more vulnerable with the increase of long-term conditions. Older people who may have had to live apart in later life as their care needs change will have the opportunity to live in modern, well-designed flats, say the council. The homes will prevent emergency hospital admissions and enable early discharge to reduce bed blocking. But the scheme has not been without controversy. Many Cheshire Street residents have objected to the development across from their homes on the site that, before it was a car park, were allotments next to Southampton Newbury Railway. Local businesses such as the East Winchester Social Club, which has since closed, the Black Rat Restaurant and the Black Boy Pub, also said it would harm their trade. The City Council say that the nearby Cheshire multi-storey car park will be able to take the vehicles. Caroline Horrell, City Councillor portfolio holder for housing, said, "Old age and possibly poor health will affect us all at some stage. I am really looking forward to seeing this life-changing facility starting on site, which will benefit Winchester's growing elderly population for years to come." One response to the public consultation said, "The siting of the proposal is ideal. It is close enough to the city centre of Winchester for an access and interest. It is adjacent to the new Community Trust Hub at Avalon House for close integration of health and social support. It is convenient for the relative stroke friend visiting." The closure of the surface car park is part of the council's parking strategy. However, the Chronicle reported last month that the council is considering dropping its 25-year policy of closing car parks and having no new ones in the city centre. All season ticket rights have been transferred to the multi-storey car park and residents' on-street parking spaces will be replaced for like for like. The City Council will write to the season ticket holders and residents shortly with more detailed information. Another car park that is due to close is the one in Upper Brook Street, should the relocation of St Clement's surgery be confirmed.
D-Day for £16 million of fire cuts. D-Day has been set for controversial decisions to shake up Hampshire's fire service. Fire chiefs from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority meet on February the 24th to discuss plans over how they will save £16 million from their budget. After 3 months of public consultation over the future of the county's fire service, fire chiefs are looking at the responses from the public. More than 200 firefighting posts are set to be lost as chiefs look to create a more relevant and efficient fire and rescue service. Hundreds of people attended public meetings and forums across the county, including at the Level 10 Church in Stanmore, and tens of thousands of people visited the fire service's website to find out what is proposed for their area. Deputy Chief Officer Neil Odin, pictured right, said, "We're really pleased with the level of feedback we have had from this consultation over the service's future of our service. The number and quality of the submissions shows how highly our communities value their fire service and how important it is we take into account the views of the people we serve. We will now spend time reviewing all the submissions and feedback to help us form the final proposals that will shape the future of Hampshire's Fire and Rescue Service." Civic chiefs from Southampton City Council have said the proposals will put lives at risk, with overnight cover at Hightown Fire Station reduced. No fire stations would close, however. Winchester and Gosport would see no full-time firefighters overnight. In option one, the two fire engines at Winchester would be replaced by an engine and a first response vehicle. At night, 14 firefighters would be on call. It would save £518,208. Under option two, at night there would be two on station and 10 on call. It would save £317,134. The average first response time would be 1 second quicker than currently, at 7 minutes and 8 seconds. Fears for the public's and firefighters' safety remain high as the service looks to employ smaller vehicles, which will carry fewer crew members, but will allow them to arrive at incidents quicker. The first response vehicles can carry two firefighters, and if there is a house fire, two will attend and begin putting the fire out while waiting for backup.
Pubs protected in an effort to save inns. They've been at the heart of their local community for generations, but they're closing at the rate of almost 30 a week. Now hundreds of pubs across the country, including more than 20 in Hampshire, have been given greater protection in a move aimed to save the Great British Local. Popular watering holes have been declared an asset of community value, ACV, which prevents them from being demolished or converted without planning permission. New figures from the Campaign for Real Ale, CAMRA, show the number of ACVs across the UK has doubled in the past 6 months. It comes just 6 weeks after campaigners won their battle to save one of the pubs on the list, the Bittern in Thornhill Park Road, Southampton. Plans to turn it into a McDonald's were thrown out in September following a public inquiry into controversial application. John Denham, who was Labour MP for Southampton Itchen when the inquiry took place, argued that the Bittern was an irreplaceable community asset and could be allowed to remain. Other ACVs include the White Horse in Keyhaven Road, Milford-on-Sea, which closed earlier this year but has now reopened. The huge rise in the number of pubs being awarded extra protection follows a joint initiative by CAMRA and the government. Campaigners are striving to ensure that a further 1,000 watering holes are listed as ACVs by local authorities by the end of the year, to help the number of pub closures currently running at 29 a week. Tim Page, CAMRA's chief executive, says it's fantastic to see community groups coming together to protect 1,200 pubs across the country from redevelopment or demolition. The figure is a testament to the effectiveness of putting power back into the hands of the local communities and giving them a chance to have a say in shaping their town centres. We hope more than double that figure by the to double that figure more than this time next year. With 29 pubs across the country closing every week, we want to secure greater support for ACV-listed pubs to ensure they continue to be at the heart of our communities. Pubs Minister Marcus Jones added, "Our pubs remain at the heart of life and camera members have done their communities proud." ACVs in Hampshire include Running Horse Winchester, Ship Inn Uslesbury, White Lion Soberton, Buck's Head Mearnstoke, Crown Inn Stockbridge, John of Gaunt Inn King Somborne, King Somborne Working Men's Club, Abbott's Mitre, Chilbolton, White Hart, Denmead, Fox and Hounds, Denmead, and the Mead End Inn, Denmead. And there's a photo of the Ship Inn in Uslesbury.
Trust blasts on failings to probe 1,000 deaths. Families of patients with mental illnesses and learning difficulties challenged Health Trust chiefs over failing to investigate the deaths of more than 1,000 people. Relatives and health campaigners demanded answers from the bosses at the heated governor's meeting of Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust. Trust governors claimed that they had learned lessons. In what was the first public meeting since the publication of a scathing independent report uncovering serious management failings. The Trust runs several hospitals, including Lee House and Melbury Lodge in Winchester. Chief Executive Katrina Percy refused to answer questions calling for her resignation. Now relatives say the Trust must do more to overhaul the system so that families don't suffer in future. Relatives also criticised governors for failing to properly challenge their leaders. The Extraordinary Council of Governors held at Tatchbury Mount in Calmore got off to an angry start when some governors objected to calls from Southampton councillor Andrew Pope for the meeting to be recorded by the press and the public. Trust Chief Dr. Chris Gordon said the Trust now accepts the findings of the NHS England. He said, "We apologise for the Trust's shortcomings. Our current policies are much more stringent." Ms. Percy said she had attended a risk summit which examined how health organisation Monitor looks into deaths. Public Governor John Green hit out at the Department of Health, saying that the culture of inspections meant the system was running like a totalitarian state, adding, "There needs to be a change in the way the NHS is managed." Governors were unable to answer questions from the public, but offered to provide answers at a later date. This included Richard West from Parkgate, who says the Trust failed to properly investigate the death of his son David, who died aged 28 following a long history of mental health problems. Afterwards, Mr. West, 60, said he wasn't impressed with their responses.
Students' Club raises £60 for charity. Winchester students, keen on personal safety, have raised money for charity. The self-defence group at Peter Simmons College is popular and its members have raised and presented £250 to WaterAid. Kitty Yarwood, the college's sports maker, said, "The course, which runs once a week at lunchtime, offers our students the chance to learn the basics of self-defence over 8 weeks. It's very popular and there are currently more than 60 students attending the sessions. Those students who want to continue with the training will be able to enrol for the after college club on Tuesday evenings. The activity is run by Adrian Starr, a local police officer and martial arts expert, who has run it for 3 years, teaching around 250 students. Amelia Payne, a lower sixth student, said, "I really enjoy this activity as it is not only a great way to get fit and exercise, but it also provides a safe environment in which to learn the basic skills of self-defence and how to keep safe." And there's a photograph of a large group of these students holding up their very large cheque.
Traders City Centre fears. Fears are growing over Winchester's shopping appeal as traders take issue with the council policy on parking and market stalls. Some city shops want more done to encourage spending and could form a new lobby group away from Winchester Business Improvement District, which currently represents them. Tony Wyman of Childhood's Dream Toy Shop in the Brooks Centre is the latest business owner to consider leaving Winchester. He said the City Council intends to close two more car parks in 2016 with no replacement in sight. The future of the bus station is not guaranteed, and if the Silverhill development ever goes ahead, it seems to offer increased retail capacity without adequate car parking, and no non-retail attractions are planned. Based on current developments, Childhood's Dream does not see a future in Winchester. Last week, the Chronicle revealed growing discontent among high street retailers over the prevalence of market stalls, which they said were attracting more people but distracting from the city shops. At least four firms are known to be considering to move, but the rush to Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market was beneficial for other businesses. Hilary Honus, co-owner of the independent holiday shop up at Brook Street, echoed calls for more parking, but said she didn't share the high street issues. She said, "For us, the Christmas market and other markets do bring a lot of people into Winchester. Our footfall is definitely higher, and I think it's down to the people coming in." The concerns have led to calls this week for the return of the City Traders Group, the lobby organisation which spawned the BID. One city centre shop owner, who asked not to be named, said, "Our customers all point to the illogical use of the high street for the market. It also makes no sense to block off the shops from public view, which is what is happening. If BID doesn't take this forward properly and with some teeth, then it's time the City Traders Group was reinstituted. One shouldn't exclude the Silver Hill debate either. The need and viability of 150,000 square feet of new retail space has to be questioned in today's internet society." Mr. Wyman wants activist business group to counter organisations such as Winchester Action on Climate Change, which lobby for the less parking in the city centre. "The BID is already about marketing and promotion," he added. Catherine Turness, executive director of Winchester BID, supports the idea. "I encourage a city traders group," she said. "Many exist already across the city and have been successful. I don't believe one exists for the high street, though, but that said, many of these businesses attend ShopWatch, which we facilitate." Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for the local economy, is meeting business leaders today to discuss the city's commercial strategy for 2016. He has previously proposed limiting the number of market days and is open to increasing parking in the city centre. And there's a few, three pictures of the city centre with the shops, and I must be the Dreamland Toy Centre, and several of the stalls in the high street.
South Downs Bloodhounds on the trail. The annual South Downs Bloodhounds meet took place on New Year's Day. Taking place in wet conditions at Abingdon Park near Itchen Abbas, the pack welcomed more than 25 participants of all ages, from hunt masters to children. There was also a good turnout of members of the public keen to see the distinctive dogs. A spokesman said the privet-based hounds had a good day and hunted well with the field, enjoying a variety of jumps alongside the route. The hounds do not hunt foxes, even if their lumbering gait was equipped to do so, but instead they followed a trail laid by human quarry. The spokesman said they had a fantastic day and wanted to thank all the local landowners for allowing them to use the land. At South Downs Bloodhounds, they believe in hunting humans for fun, which is exactly what they do each week during the season. Anyone who would like to join the South Downs Bloodhounds or simply want to find out more about them, then visit their website at www.southdownsbloodhounds.com That's www.southdownbloodhounds.com.
Support for plan to cut road deaths. A scheme designed to cut road deaths has won the backing of the Department for Transport. Project Pictogram, Driving Safer Roads, was developed by Romsey-based brand marketer Phil Palfrey, along with road safety partners from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, Hampshire and Thames Valley Police Forces, and Hampshire, Southampton and Portsmouth Councils. The idea works by inviting vehicles to display a set of pictogram stickers depicting the fatal four drivers' behaviours which kill and seriously injure people on the roads. The objective is that these stickers become a voluntary industry standard amongst the business fleet vehicle community, providing daily on-road reminders to motorists on every journey of the driver behaviour habits we can all improve. The stickers work on the behavioural psychology principle of nudge theory, where frequent subtle reminders deliver large-scale behaviour change. Now the project has been endorsed by the DFT after scrutiny by the Think communication team. Mr. Palfrey said, "When inviting businesses to invest in any initiative, they naturally want assurances that it will deliver results and pay back." Project Pictogram had already been scrutinised and endorsed by all leading road safety organisations, including Road Safety GB, ROSPA, IAM, Chief Fire Officers Association, and the Association of British Insurers. So we knew the technical content was sound, but the Think team are the large-scale marketing communications experts in this area, so their assessment of the message delivery was crucial. And there is a photo of Phil Palfrey holding up his fatal four pictograms.
Price rail hike unfair on area. Hampshire commuters are getting a bum deal from rail fare hikes because multi-million pound railway upgrades are most benefiting London, an academic has claimed. Thousands of workers will pay more to travel to in 2016, with fare rises averaging 1.1%. It's the lowest increase since 2010, but one county researcher has said rail passengers will be very unimpressed with what they get in return. An annual season ticket between Winchester and Waterloo now costs £4,860, up by a quarter on 5 years ago. South West Trains and Network Rail are spending £65 million on the line from Weymouth to Waterloo, rolling out 108 extra carriages. Busy peak time trains are becoming extended, with extra morning and Sunday trains adding thousands of seats. But Dr. James Pritchard, research fellow at Southampton University, said the region was getting a bit of a bum deal because the refurbished carriages are being installed in London's suburbs while the older models are shipped south. Passengers will be very unimpressed, Mr. Pritchard added. The average 1.1% increase in regulated fares applies to around half of tickets, including season passes. Train companies have free rein over unregulated fares. A Southwest train spokesman said, providing a major increase in capacity for passengers in Southampton and other stations on the main line to Weymouth requires improvements to rail infrastructure, and we are working closely with the government to secure these improvements as swiftly as possible. In the meantime, we're doing all we can to increase capacity. We are nearing completion of £65 million rollout of 106 additional and refurbished carriages. These will provide space for more than 20,000 extra passengers right across the network by extending many of our busiest services. The arrival of extra blue train carriages angered Winchester MP Steve Bryan in November, who said their cramped three-in-a-row seats made commuting a nightmare.
Annual vintage bus event. Historic Winchester buses took to the roads on January 1st for their annual New Year's Day event. organised by the Friends of King Alfred buses, three vehicles rumbled around the routes throughout the day, the 30th year of the event. It is now a much smaller event than it was in the past, with the main event now being held in the warmer month of May. The 1959 Leyland Tiger Cub, 1964 AEC renowned double-decker, and the 1970 Leyland Panther took travellers around Winchester and as far as Crawley, Oslebury and Sparsholt. The routes were originally operated by the bus company R. Chisnell & Sons between 1920 and 1973, but it went bust as custom declined. The next major outing for the King Alfred buses will be the running day on May the 1st, when up to a dozen old vehicles will be operating free services in the city from the Cattle Market car park. The vehicles are restored, maintained and run by the Friends of King Alfred Buses, a registered charity based in Bar End, which has no paid staff and is dedicated to preserving the memory of the Chisnell Buses coach operation. And there's a picture of the iconic green bus, number 18, outside the Mayor's Palace. Thank you.
Flood scares as 95 incidents reported. Flash floods hit Winchester District on Sunday as torrential downpours led to road closures and sewage leaks. Highway officers were called to 95 incidents across the county, with Alresford, Twyford, Sparsholt and Eastleigh among the worst affected areas. Homes and businesses avoided serious damage, but sandbags were handed out and several roads closed. In Sun Lane, Alresford, residents scrambled to divert water into a field as runoff from the A31 threatened to flood homes. Paul Dix of Tichborne Downs said, "It was the worst that I've ever known. I've been here 30 years, but we've never had flooding like that. This area is proposed for development, including access slip roads off the A31 and an industrial park in the field in Whitehill Lane, now a sizeable lake. Residents fear these developments will make flooding vastly more serious in future." Meanwhile, sewage spilled into Seegers Lane, Twyford and Kiln Lane near Highbridge as manholes were overpowered. Roads were also immersed in Hairstock, Stanmore, St Cross and other areas. Highways officers were out non-stop since the deluge at around noon, a spokesman said. Hampshire County Council was called to 18 fallen trees on the eve of many workers returning after the Christmas break. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said on Monday, "We've had extra crews, extra tankers and extra arboriculture teams out round the clock dealing with water on the roads and fallen trees as a result of the heavy rain." All roads in Hampshire were clear and passable as of Monday afternoon. Rain is forecast for the rest of the week, with windy conditions on Saturday. An Environment Agency spokesman said, "Environment Agency teams on the ground across the area are operating structures and clearing grills to keep the rivers flowing freely. With further unsettled weather expected this week, the Environment Agency will continue to monitor the situation closely."
Lorry blocks the A272 after a U-turn gaffe. Most drivers will admit sometimes changing their minds at the last minute, but most drivers are not in very large lorries that don't take kindly to such treatment. This jackknifed lorry caused delays after it attempted a U-turn on a main road near Winchester and got stuck on Tuesday afternoon. The 18-wheeler was about to take a wrong turn while going around a roundabout at Three Maids Hill near Littleton. The driver then decided to rectify his decision by turning around at the A272 junction. After botching the turn, the HGV got stuck in the mud off the road and help had to be called to free him. The wedge truck blocked one half of the 272 southbound for a number of hours, and police had to assist unsighted motorists approaching the roundabout. Officers guided motorists around the stranded vehicle and acted as human traffic lights, while the lorry was receiving help from a tow truck. The driver of the vehicle didn't wish to comment on his actions, but was jeered by passing motorists for the delays caused. His vehicle was freed in just after 3:30 p.m. and there's a sign of this huge vehicle right across the road, absolutely unable to move.
Police search for dogs' owners. Pictures of five dogs that killed a reindeer on a Hampshire farm have been released by police in a bid to crack down suspected poachers. The police has released images of the dogs responsible for killing Comet, the reindeer from Emma's mobile farm, in Swanmore. The Lurcher-type dogs also killed a rabbit and severely injured reindeer Candy on December the 4th. As previously reported, the owner of the farm, Emma Thompson, 39, was horrified to find her reindeer had been attacked after 11:30 p.m. Emma takes the reindeer to schools and nursery events to meet the children. She said she saved Candy by pushing away one of the dogs as it grabbed Candy round the neck with its jaws. She said, "When the dog started running at us, my first instinct was to protect Candy and I tried to get the dog away. She had Candy by the throat and I had to push it away to push it off her. If she had bolted, she would surely have died. When I saw Comet, I felt very angry. At first, I was just a bit taken aback and my husband wouldn't let me see him. I called him and he didn't come to me and I knew that if he was all right, he would have come to me as he's a very friendly animal." Emma says she believes that there were three men. A dark green Jeep Cherokee was seen driving into the farm, also known as 12 Oaks, in Brickyard Road at the time of the incident. Police say the five dogs broke free from the vehicle driven through the petting farm's fence as it pursued by officers and a helicopter. The occupants fled on foot, leaving the dogs behind. The police ask anyone who recognises the dogs or who may know who the owners are to get in touch. Sergeant Deborah Holman said, "Poaching is a major problem, not just in Hampshire. The people that commit these kind of crimes are often linked to organised crime. We urge anyone who recognises these dogs or knows who the owners might be to be get in contact with us by calling 101 and quoting, this is a long number, 44150422868. And there is a picture of Emma Thompson with a lovely white reindeer lying down in a stall. I presume this is Candy, the one who survived. And there's also pictures of five Lurcher dogs, and they all look incredibly innocent. But I'm sure it's the owners that put them up to it.
Laura Trant takes on new charity role. One of the South's most popular television presenters has taken on a new role as a leading figurehead for a Hampshire cancer charity. BBC presenter and reporter Laura Trant has been appointed Vice President of Wessex Cancer Trust, which reaches out to patients and their families across the region battling the disease. The announcement comes ahead of the Southampton-based charity celebrating its 35th anniversary next year, when it plans to expand its services across Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, the Isle of Wight and the Channel Islands. This includes opening two more community cancer centres to boost six support centres already running, where people can drop in for professional counselling, complementary therapies, exercise, information and advice, including two with facilities for children. They will also launch a mobile unit, enabling them to provide services for people in hard-to-reach areas. Laura, born in Dorset and raised in Hampshire, is a regular fixture on the South's television screens. She said, "I have known for many years about the fantastic work the charity does and the support it provides to people living with cancer in our local communities. There are some big plans for 2016 and I can't wait to get involved." Chief Executive Kate Allen said, "We're very excited to welcome Laura. She is joining us at an exciting time as we celebrate the past and plan an even brighter future."
call for donations to South Downs Park. A new donation scheme means that people who enjoy the South Downs Way have a chance to help with its upkeep. More than 20,000 long-distance walkers, cyclists and riders complete the 160-kilometre trail every year. Andy Gattaker, South Downs Way manager, said, "We have around 15,000 pairs of boots, 10,000 tyres and 800 hooves travelling the length of the trail each year. That's a lot of wear and tear. We're so proud that it's not just one of the best-known trails in the country, but the people use it, the experience of it, to raise thousands of pounds each year for charity. We work hard to keep the South Downs Way in good condition and have lots of ideas for projects to improve it. For example, we'd love to install more location-specific signposts, put in more drinking water taps and manage more path verges for wildflowers. If everyone who used the trail gave just £1, we could be even more ambitious. To make a donation towards the South Downs Way, visit www.nationaltrail.co.uk/south-downs-way/donate. I better do that again, I think. www.nationtrail.co.uk/south-downs-way/donate.
Well done.
Donation boost for ramp campaign. A campaign for a disabled and pushchair ramp at a church hall in Swanmore has been boosted by a donation worth hundreds of pounds. More than £2,000 has now been raised by St Barnabas Church to provide better access for the Patterson Centre and Barnaby's coffee shop. A new £500 donation was presented by Linden Homes Southern and the firm behind 70 new homes at Scholars Grange off New Road. The Patterson Centre is used for nursery and preschool, guides, coffee mornings and clubs for bridge, Pilates, art and lace, as well as the Meon Valley carers. Vicar Claire Town says, "We are really keen to be able to build this ramp as soon as possible in order to make the excellent facilities we have here more accessible and available for a wider range of users. Huge thanks to Linden Homes for their contribution." Tina Chalk, Linden Homes Southern Marketing Manager, added, "The Patterson Centre is a highly valued community facility for Swanmore, so we wanted to help make it accessible for everyone, including wheelchair users and parents with prams. We're delivering brand new family homes at Scholars Grange, which we think will be very popular, but we're keen for our contribution to the village to go beyond the building site. To donate, contact Claire Towns on 01489-808968. I'll repeat that again. 01489-808968 or clairetowns@gmail.com. And there is a picture of the vicar and three helpers with a huge cheque for the £500 from HSBC and Linden Homes.
Surgery plan submitted. Fresh plans have been submitted to rebuild a doctor's practice in Winchester city centre. St Clement's Surgery is set to be relocated on the open air car park on Upper Brook Street, opposite KFC and Domino's. The 2- and 3-storey facility will contain 18 consulting rooms, 3 treating rooms, offices, and a pharmacy, according to a new planning application. Similar proposals were approved by the City Council in 2012, but planning permission expired last summer. Doctors have long complained that the current surgery on Tanner Street is too cramped and lobbied civic chiefs for action. Architecture PLB, which designed the scheme for Winchester City Council, has proposed hard landscaping the corner, including the road, to create a more pleasant public space. City Council boss Stephen Godfrey has stuck by his pledge to deliver the surgery by August 2017, despite doubts over the wider Silver Hill project, which must go ahead for it to be built. The two are linked, as the Silver Hill developer will cover the building costs, and there's a computer-generated image of what the new surgery will look like, and it looks very smart.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Judith Steventon-Baker and Valerie Lilly. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Norma York.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye. And do have a good week. And please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.